Although the Warhammer universe is one often characterized by its endless war and ceaseless over-the-top action, those who are familiar with its lore know the truth, that 40K is a horror story. The Milky Way galaxy of the 41st millennium is a nightmare hellscape, the hunting grounds of the alien, the heretic, and the mutant. It is a realm where ancient horrors prowl the dark places between stars, and unspeakable evils worm their way into the minds and hearts of even the most faithful of the God Emperor's servants. Nowhere in the galaxy are such terrors more abundant than on the many backwater feudal worlds far removed from the Emperor's light, and seemingly forgotten by the Imperium of Man. Worlds that are far too often forced to face the terror of the grimdark future completely alone. As it happens, such a world is the setting for tonight's tale. The Eisenbrack Horror was a short story written by Darius Hinks, collected in the Warhammer horror anthology The Resting Places, released in April of 2023. This is but one of the spine-chilling stories included in this anthology, so if you enjoyed this video, then I encourage you to support the original release. A link to the book will be provided in the description of this video. The story begins, as many tales of horror often do, on a dark and stormy night, as we follow a man named Sabinus, a freedom fighter who, along with the rest of his brotherhood, plots in secret to free their world from the tyrannical grip of a planetary governor that perverts the word of the Emperor for his own gain. Despite the Brotherhood's strict dedication to secrecy, tragedy has begun to strike. One by one, their members have been picked off, killed under mysterious circumstances. It is on this night that our protagonist, as well as his trusted confidant, decide to meet in a ruined cathedral feared haunted by the village locals. Although the pair believe the myths to be utter nonsense, they do not deny the usefulness of their existence, as they guarantee privacy for the delicate planning of regicide. As they say, however, all legends bear at least a kernel of truth, and it is here, in the crumbling ruins of the old Eisenbrock Basilica, that they will come face to face with an ancient, predatory evil. So come with me, my friends, gather round and listen well, as we face down the Eisenbrock Horror and another spine-chilling entry in the Grimdark Story Hour. But first, a quick shout-out to this video's sponsor, Into the AM.
If you somehow haven't heard of them, Into the AM makes some of the best graphic tees that you can get on the internet. I'm a huge fan of their shirts, as you can tell by the fact that I wear them in pretty much every video I make, regardless if they're sponsoring it or not. They're easily the comfiest shirts that I own. The material is super soft, the fit is great, and they've got a little bit of extra length, which I'm a big fan of. Oh yeah, and they're shrink and fade resistant. The oldest Into the AM shirts I have are about 2 years old at this point, and it seems like no matter how many times I run them through the wash, they still fit great and look just as good as the day I bought them. Now personally, I've always loved their loud, colorful, classic designs like this one, but they've been making these really cool vintage tees recently that are really starting to grow on me. Plus, they've got awesome flannels, polos, hoodies, and a whole lot more. They really have something for everyone, no matter what your style. And listen, I know you guys have been hearing me talk about how great these shirts are forever now, but if you're still on the fence, I've got some pretty big news. Right now, Into the AM is having a huge sale to celebrate the 4th of July, where you can get 30% off site-wide. And if that wasn't good enough, my viewers can use the link in the description of this video or code WESHAMMER at checkout to save an additional 10% off their entire order. But be quick, because this sale's only gonna run until July 8th. Big thanks to Into the AM for sponsoring this video. Now back to the Grimdark.
The wind howled through the gnarled trees, their twisted branches reaching out like skeletal fingers towards Sabinus as the rain cascaded down in heavy sheets. The sound of his horse's hooves striking the muddy path echoed in rhythmic thumps as he made his way through the enveloping darkness. Despite the appalling travel conditions and severely limited visibility, the route Sabinus found himself on this night was one he could have made drunk and blindfolded, for it had been etched into his very soul after hundreds of crossings in his youth. Those days were long behind him, as he was past his prime, pushing 50 years Terran standard. And although in his age, certain things had become more of a struggle, even if he would never admit it out loud, these roads were ones that he would never forget, as it was along their path when he was a boy that he first heard the traveling missionaries preach the Imperial Creed. It was where he had learned the truth, that the God Emperor was more than just a face in a painting, more than just a name to chant at the winter festivals. He was real, and an inconceivable distance away, seated upon his golden throne, He watched over and protected the faithful. Sabinus was a pious man, and though recent tragedy weighed heavily on his soul, the memory of those sermons brought him at least a small amount of comfort as he made his way through the wind and rain. Eventually, he came to a crossroads, and many of the paths clearly having not been used in decades as they were completely overgrown with weeds and nettles, yet many more were well tended and bared the telltale signs of heavy traffic. He reined his horse down the most overgrown path, pushing the animal on through the thick undergrowth, despite his steed's insistent snorting complaints. After about 20 minutes, they reached a clearer stretch that led down into a bracken-crowded gully. He carved a path through the forest for nearly an hour until he finally glimpsed his destination, rising up ahead. Ruined walls and crumbling towers reached up into the downpour like a giant's arms raised in silent prayer. The old Eisenbrach Basilica had been abandoned for many years and was a far cry from the center of spiritual enlightenment it had once been. Most didn't even know that it was out here, and those that did spoke of it only in the context of an absurd local folktale. The Eisenbrach Horror, the villagers called it, a malevolent specter of pure evil, a being of sentient darkness that lurked within its hallowed halls, feeding on any foolish enough to encroach upon its domain uninvited. Although Sabinus knew such tales to be ludicrous superstition, he was grateful for the legend's existence. The villagers were a superstitious lot. They would never dare venture too deep into the forest, let alone in the middle of the night, and certainly not during a storm such as this one. Because of this unique combination of traits, Eisenbrach was the perfect meeting place for individuals like himself. People weighed down by duty in a desire to expose the truth, whatever the cost. He made his way through the overgrown courtyard and eventually spotted Zerberin's horse tethered to a crumbling wall out in the open. He muttered a curse to himself, even if the likelihood that somebody would come all the way out here in the middle of the night was next to nothing. They could not afford to be lax in their tenets of secrecy, certainly not after recent events. Their goals were too important to risk discovery, and if found out, they would certainly be executed for treason. He untethered the horse and led both animals into a crumbling, roofless chamber. There was an old fireplace that looked like a gaping mouth in the middle of the room's center. He imagined the priest that used to call this place home must have spent many a night just like this one, gathered around for warmth as they prayed for deliverance. It was then that he saw the man he was looking for, his friend and companion Zerberin, emerging from a crumbling archway. He had a big smile plastered across his rain-soaked face, and his long black hair hung in thick clumps over his forehead.
"Looks like they're feeding you too well,"
he said, embracing Sabinus. Despite the grim news that he had come to share with his friend, he couldn't help but smile back. He'd always found Zerberin's good humor infectious.
"When you're as old as me, you take your pleasures where you can."
He was truly happy to see him, but Sabinus had never been skilled at hiding his thoughts. The grim circumstances for why he had called this meeting in the first place were written plainly across his face, something his old friend was far too intuitive to not pick up on.
"I know you wouldn't drag me out here to reminisce. I think we might actually drown if we stand here much longer. There's a bit of roof left on one of the other chambers. Come, let's talk there."
They picked their way through the rubble to a dry spot under some rafters, shook their cloaks free of rain, and sat on the remains of a fallen column.
"You tell me, what new heresy has the sovereign committed? More statues of his pretty face? More wealth stripped from the cathedral?"
Sabinus struggled to meet his eye, staring at the cracked flagstones instead. He took out a hip flask, drank some of the contents, and handed it to Zerberin.
"No, for once it's not the sovereign,"
he shrugged.
"Or perhaps it is. It's hard to say, really. Have you heard about Solomon?"
"Yeah. Ill for weeks, I hear."
Zerberin nodded sadly.
"He's dead."
Zerberon's face stiffened.
"Dead?
Illness was a story, propagated to keep his vassals from hysteria and stop his rivals seizing power. He was missing for a week, and then his horse returned. Deranged, covered in blood, carrying scraps of Solomon, pieces of his scalp."
Zerberin paled. For a moment, he seemed unable to speak, and they sat there, listening to the rain drumming on the rafters.
"He might not be dead,"
he said quietly. Sabinus shook his head.
"I thought the same as you for a while, but then the weeks went by."
Zerberin stared at the floor.
"And that's not all. Kasserin has vanished too."
Zurbaran winced. Solom and Kasserin were not simply their friends. They were fellow conspirators, members of their secret society that they had christened the Terran Brotherhood. They had all sworn a sacred oath.
"Nah, that can't be a coincidence," he said, his voice taut.
"No, but this changes nothing. That's why I wanted you to hear it from me. You still gotta remain true to the..."
"It changes nothing. How can you say that? It changes everything. We've been discovered, Sabinus."
"It changes nothing."
Sabinus struggled to keep his voice level.
"We still can't let the Sovereign stay on the throne. He's a tyrant and a heretic. We can't let him continue perverting the word of the God Emperor with his vanity and idolatry. We've seen the truth, Zurbaran, and now we can't simply unsee it. The Sovereign claims to be a man of faith, but it's a lie. You know it is. He corrupts the Emperor's word and uses the Imperial Creed to secure his grip on power. He doesn't believe, not as we do. He has to go."
"Yeah, but what can we do?" muttered Zurbaran. "If the Brotherhood's been discovered, a Sovereign won't stop at killing just the two of us. He'll want all our heads. He'll send his agents after us. He'll hunt us down."
"If we've been discovered, it means someone betrayed us. Someone in the Brotherhood. It's the only explanation."
Zurbaran looked appalled.
"Are you accusing me?"
"No. I knew as soon as I saw your face that couldn't be you."
"Who then? Cimmerus, Miana, Taurus? It'll be their death sentence too if the Sovereign has learned what we've discussed."
"Unless one of them is working for the Sovereign."
No, I can't believe it. I won't. It can't be any of them."
Sabinus shook his head.
"It has to be one of us. Think how careful we've been."
"It makes no difference."
Zurbaran's voice was cold and hard.
"We've failed."
"We can't fail. How could we ever pray to the God Emperor again if we left the Sovereign on his throne? We'd be even more heretical than the Sovereign himself. Remember the words of the missionaries. It's our duty to cast out the heretic. We are bound by faith."
Zurbaran rose to his feet, gripping the handle of his sword. For a moment, Sabinus thought that he was about to draw the weapon and threaten him, but he turned to leave instead.
"If he knows some names, he knows all our names."
Sabinus grabbed his arm, about to continue the argument, when a rattling sound echoed through the ruins. They froze and stared at each other.
"You were followed,"
whispered Sabinus.
"Impossible. I was too careful. No one knows I'm here, even my servants."
The sound came again, like a sword rattling in its scabbard. They crept slowly across the ruins, moving away from the rafters and stepping back into the rain, drawing their swords and clutching them tightly. Sabinus thought about retrieving the pistol from one of his saddlebags, but quickly dismissed the idea. It would be useless in a heavy downpour like this, and if there really was someone out there, stepping out into the open would risk discovery. Zurbaran tapped Sabinus on the shoulder and motioned towards a mostly intact passageway that offered good cover. He nodded, and they headed in that direction, keeping their heads low. As they moved deeper inside of the ruins, there was still no cover from the rain, and its persistent fall made it impossible to light a torch. They fumbled their way through the darkness until they eventually came to a set of age-worn steps. They descended down into another room and found the culprit behind the noise. An old trapdoor in the center of the room had been loosened by the storm and was banging open and shut like the gaping maw of a primordial beast. Zurbaran let out a sigh of relief.
"There's no one here."
As much as Sabinus wanted to take him at his word, he wasn't so sure. He dropped to one knee and inspected the opening. The yawning darkness beyond was profound, and he could make out nothing save for the first few steps leading underneath the basilica. He felt the hair on the back of his neck stand at attention, and an icy chill grip around his heart as he stared into the black void before him. He couldn't shake the feeling that he was being watched, and someone, or something, was waiting for him down below.
"Look at the lock. It's been used recently. Someone is here."
Zurbaran knelt down beside him.
"The dust's been disturbed recently, and it's not just the rain. Look, footprints."
"We should leave,"
muttered Sabinus, a feeling of dread settling over him. He had to look over his shoulder to reassure himself that there was no one behind him. Zurbaran shook his head.
"This could be the traitor. Think of Solomon and Kasserin. We might have a chance to avenge him."
Anger flashed in his eyes.
"Besides, if someone's seen us, we can't let him leave."
Sabinus shifted his view back to the trap door, and he felt a knot of fear welling up in the pit of his stomach. His thoughts turned to the ramblings of the innkeeper from the night before. His face had been flushed with ale and beaded with sweat as he whispered hysterically to a disinterested Sabinus about the Eisenbrach horror. "It's always hungry," he had said. "Always waiting." He shook his head and snapped out of it.
"You're right,"
he whispered, tightening his grip on his sword. He thought again to run back and grab the pistol from his saddlebag, but the fear of being exposed out in the open was more palpable than the aura of dread emanating from the trap door. Zurbrunn whispered a curse and began climbing down the steps. Sabinus muttered a prayer to the Emperor and hurried in after him. As they descended, the faint moonlight gradually diminished until the darkness around them was completely suffocating. To make things worse, the air was heavy with the overwhelming stench of decay. But all things considered, the interior of the stairwell did at least provide a welcome reprieve from the rain. They had barely made it halfway down the steps when Sabinus felt something crunch under his foot. He bent down to pick it up and found what felt like a long piece of bone wrapped in shredded cloth. Thinking quickly, he emptied the contents of his hip flask onto it and created a makeshift torch. Now able to see, he looked around. For as decrepit as the basilica had become on its surface, the damage down here was far more minimal. On the walls, he could see peeling depictions of the God Emperor striding across the cosmos, bringing order and reason as his great crusade soared across the crumbling masonry. Zurbrunn stopped and turned back to his friend, staring at the bone torch.
"Where'd you find that?"
He was holding his hand over his mouth and nose, trying to block out the smell.
"It was lying on the step."
Sabinus looked around, raising the torch a little higher, trying to find a crypt or a sarcophagus in the wall of the stairwell that the bone surely must have come from. But he didn't see any.
"Nah, it's not old enough," said Zurbrunn, his lip curling in distaste.
"What do you mean?"
"Think about it. If there are priests buried here, their remains would be centuries old. But that bone's still got dry blood on it. And clothes."
The innkeeper's face flashed through Sabinus's thoughts once again, spitting and cursing as he described the Eisenbrach horror. Always hungry, always waiting.
"Someone might have crept in here to die,"
he said, not at all convinced by his own theory.
"Injured, perhaps. There are bears in these woods."
The two men stood in silence, contemplating the situation they now found themselves in. Although it went unsaid, they imagined they were both sharing the same thought. They could turn back now and forget about this place.
"Now someone saw us," whispered Zurbrunn, looking down into the darkness. "Maybe even heard what we were saying."
"Let's get to the bottom of the steps and see what we can find, but I'm not going to go scouring every crypt and cellar."
Zurbrunn looked as if he was about to argue, but instead nodded grimly, and they made their way down. Eventually, the stairs came to an end, and they stepped into a large circular room that was remarkably well-preserved. Its walls were adorned with depictions of the God Emperor and 9 heavily armored champions in the midst of a great and terrible battle, against an army of monsters that was attempting to lay siege to his palace. Sabinus was looking over his shoulder back at the stairwell, unable to shake the feeling that they were being watched, when he felt Zurbrunn grab him by the arm.
"There, on the floor, leading to the archway. What is that?"
He turned and looked where his friend was pointing. He could barely make out anything in the gloom, but he did see dark stains on the floor, leading into a doorway on the far side of the room.
"Looks like blood. Perhaps it's from the person who was watching us."
"Think about it. It could be anyone," whispered Sabinus. "Why would it be someone who knows who we are? If someone's hiding out in a crypt, they could have many reasons for wanting to hide."
The two made their way forward, their boots tracking through the thick, tacky substance on the floor. They entered the passageway, and after a short distance, spotted what looked like a large pile of rags off in the distance. But as the two men stepped closer and it came more and more into view, to their horror, they realized that they had located the source of the smell. The shape was a withered, rotten corpse. The thing's skin was as white as bleached bone, but it was no skeleton. Its abdomen was swollen with rot. Its arm was outstretched, frozen by rigor mortis, as if the victim had died in terror, fighting off an unseen attacker.
"Throne of Terror,"
gasped Sabinus, turning away and covering his mouth, battling the urge to vomit.
"So pale,"
muttered Zurbrunn.
"Like marble."
Sabinus shook his head.
"What are we doing down here? We should..."
"Wait," said Zurbrunn, grabbing his shoulder.
"Look at the cloak."
Sabinus forced himself to turn back and look at the body, a horrible sense of familiarity slowly dawning on him. Though it was tattered and stained in dry blood, The symbol on the cloak was unmistakable, a family crest, one the pair both recognized as belonging to a fellow conspirator, a member of their brotherhood.
Taurus?
It is, whispered Zerberon, creeping closer and staring at the body's sagging, colorless face.
It is him. How can he be here?
It was just then that their investigation was suddenly interrupted by a loud bang as the door to the passageway behind them slammed shut. They jumped in shock and raised their swords. The impact was so strong that it caused a wave of dank air to rush through the chamber, almost entirely extinguishing their torch. Sabinus breathed desperately on the flickering embers, trying to keep the fire alive. But it was no use. The miserable flame that was left was only bright enough to illuminate the corpse at their feet.
Damn you!
Cried Zerberon, abandoning any attempt at secrecy as he hammered the door with his sword pommel.
Open this door!
Zerberon's voice was filled with panic, and Sabinus felt his heart race. He hurried to help, but saw that it was futile. The door was a solid stone slab without a handle. There was no getting through. Claustrophobia gripped them both. They were trapped, with no way out. Sabinus looked past the corpse into the darkness beyond. Another clattering sound echoed down the passageway towards them. Zerberon stopped pounding on the door and looked around, eyes straining.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, further down the passageway,
said Sabinus. He looked at the corpse again. Then he took a deep breath and nodded.
There could be another way out, and we have swords.
Zerberon gave him an incredulous look.
Yeah? Well, what else do you suggest? Wait here till we starve?
Zerberon closed his eyes. Then he nodded and gestured for Sabinus to lead the way. As they journeyed deeper into the basilica's depths, the fetid smell of decay continued to grow stronger, despite the fact that they were moving away from Taurus's corpse. The faint buzzing of unseen flies in the darkness came to accompany the echoing reverberations of their footsteps. Sabinus felt like he was in a dream, a terrible claustrophobic nightmare. Any moment now, he would reawaken back in the safety of the inn he had stayed in the night before. But he knew that wasn't true. He knew there was no waking up from this, and if they were going to make it out alive, the two of them would need to keep their wits about. The light of their torch was so pathetic, they could only see a few feet ahead. The paralyzing fear of what lurked unseen in the shadows, combined with the logical knowledge that moving too quickly risked accidentally extinguishing their only light source, kept the pair moving at a slow pace, an ominous feeling of dread building with every careful step. Not a word was spoken between the two, and their breathing came in quick gasps. Sabinus realized his hand was trembling, causing small embers to spill from the torch. They eventually came to the end of the passage and made their way into another large antechamber. At first, they thought they must have walked in a complete circle, but that couldn't be possible. They had moved in a straight line. They looked around in the darkness with their swords raised, ready for their unseen pursuer to make their move. But it never came. It was so dark, they could have been surrounded by an entire army, and they wouldn't have even known it. A feeling that did nothing to ease their growing paranoia. They crept forward, towards the center of the room, and, much like before, another large shape began to take form on the floor in front of them. It was another body, as pale and sickly as the moon, as if the murderer had carefully drained it of every last drop of blood. But the similarities didn't end there. To their horror, they realized they recognized this victim as well.
It can't be. It's Simmerus.
Another one of their brothers lay dead at their feet. What had they both been doing here, and who or what had done this? As he pondered the details of the situation they now found themselves in, a horrible realization slowly dawned on Sabinus. There could only be one explanation.
It's a trap. Someone led us here.
They both turned to look at each other, but before either could open their mouth to speak, something massive stirred in the darkness and lurched forward into the torchlight to greet them. The thing was enormous, easily 10 feet in height, and towered over the pair. It had arms and legs like a man, but they were grotesquely elongated and wrought from powerful corded muscle. Its face was hideously deformed. It looked like it had been melted and then crushed. Its cheeks drooped in deep folds of pale, sickly skin, and its snout was fleshy and upturned. Its eyes were like beady black pearls of pure obsidian. And its mouth, which hung open unnaturally wide, was filled with wet, glistening teeth, each the size of a dagger and equally lethal. The thing's breath was hot and foul, every snorting exhalation bringing with it the scent of old blood and moldering flesh. In the dim light, Sabinus struggled to make out the details. It was as if this thing was so unnatural, such a mockery of the laws of nature, that his mind refused to comprehend all but its most prominent features. For to witness such a horror raw and unfiltered was to court irreparable madness. They were both frozen in fear, their swords hanging limply in the grips of arms that refused to move. The thing's head drifted slowly from side to side, as if calmly studying them. It raised its arms, revealing thin, leathery wings. Then, with a sickening, inhuman speed, its head shot forward, its massive jaws snapping with a violent, wet crunch around Zerberon's neck. Sabinus stared on in horror as his friend crumbled to the floor with the hideous thing hunched over him, eagerly sucking at his throat with revolting, breathy snorts. For a few terrible, agonizing moments, Zerberon was still alive, thrashing weakly against his attacker, his heels drumming against the floor. All he could do was stare into Sabinus's eyes as his life force drained away. The monster flexed, enveloping him in its huge, leathery wings, breaking Sabinus's view as it fed. Sabinus slowly backed away, drunk on terror, and tripped over a loose flagstone. His sword and torch slipped from his grip, and it fizzled out as it hit the ground, plunging the chamber into darkness. Sabinus was no coward. He was a veteran of dozens of battles, but as he sat there in the dark, listening to the sounds of tearing meat and snapping bones, it was as if he was a terrified child once again. In a sudden moment of clarity, he snapped out of his trance, leapt to his feet, and sprinted back the way he had come. In his panic state, the logical thought of retrieving his downed weapon was drowned out by the most primitive part of his brain's command to run. The only thing he could think to do was to put as much distance between himself and that abomination as possible. He was running blind, and he had only made it a short distance before he came to a sudden jarring stop, white-hot pain erupting in his face. For a brief, terrible moment, he thought the creature had caught him. But he quickly realized that, in his haste to get away, he had run headfirst into a wall. He recovered and placed his hand on the stone, continuing to move forward. He hadn't got a good look at the antechamber before everything went dark, but he remembered that it was circular. So long as he didn't take his hand off the stone wall, he would eventually find an opening, either the passageway they had entered from, or another that he could use to escape. The logical part of his mind knew that this was hopeless. Whatever that thing was, it was a perfectly honed killing machine, evolved to hunt in perfect darkness. It would catch him, and it would tear him to pieces. But that didn't matter. He was running on pure fear and adrenaline, and the desire to survive pushed him on. He ran as fast as he could, his heart thundering in his chest as he desperately searched for a way out. Suddenly, there was another explosion of pain, this time in his shins, and he felt his body tumbling forward. But something jagged and hard broke his fall. Although he couldn't see what he landed on, he knew he hadn't fallen completely prone. And after feeling around with his hands, he realized he had tripped over the first few steps at the bottom of a stairwell. He could hear the terrible sounds of the beast feeding on his friend, but they were distant now, more muffled. A fleeting ember of hope ignited in his chest, and it pushed him up the steps into another room. He could tell by the echo his feet were making that this was another massive auditorium, maybe even the one they had first entered, but there was no way to know. He couldn't see his own hands in front of his face, let alone make out his surroundings. He repeated his strategy from before, fumbling through the dark with his arms outstretched until he found a wall he could use as a guide. After he found it, he ran along the room's perimeter. As he made his way, he could see the gloom ahead beginning to break, the chamber around him coming more and more into focus. There was moonlight here, spilling from some steps up above. He had found it, a way out of this nightmare. He dashed for the stairs, and he had almost made it, when the sound of movement behind him froze him in his tracks. The creature had caught up to him. He could hear its terrible, heavy breathing, the rustling of leathery wings, and the screeching sound of sharp talons dragging across old stone. He heard it enter the room, its grotesque pig-like nose huffing at the air, savoring the scent of its prey's fear. He sprinted up the steps, clinging to the hope that his horse was tethered near the trap door. If he could just make it that far, he could escape. As he ascended, he felt like he was swimming through an endless abyss or rising from a grave, With every step, he shrugged off more of the figurative and literal darkness, like earth and sod. He could hear the beast following behind him, picking up speed as it forced its huge body up the stairwell. With a final burst of adrenaline, he leapt out into the rain-drenched courtyard. He had done it. He had made it out, but the monster was right behind him. He could hear its ragged breathing and the tapping of those lethal claws on the old steps echoing from behind him. He frantically searched around, whipping back and forth in the rain, desperately trying to spot the horses. And at last, he saw them. Or at least, what was left of them. One of them had been completely ripped apart. Pieces of torn meat and severed limbs were scattered loosely amidst a growing pool of red blood that was rapidly being washed away by the rain. The other had simply been disemboweled, its innards hanging loosely like a nest of thick purple ropes. He howled in despair as he rushed over to them, grabbing the creature's reins and frantically tugging at them in deranged desperation, as if he could somehow wrench it back to life. That's when he heard that telltale scraping sound behind him and turned to see the monster, its unnatural silhouette framed by pale moonlight and the breaking rain. Its mouth was drenched in gore, and thick trails of Zuberon's flayed skin hung loosely from its jaws. Even now that it was out in the open, he found it difficult to make out its more grotesque features, as if it was a creature not made of tangible substance like flesh and bone, but something wrought from pure shadow, a sentient nightmare, a mocking parody of existence. There was nowhere to flee. He was backed into a corner with a wall on either side of him. He whispered a prayer to the God Emperor and backed away, stopping only when he felt the wall press against his back. As if in answer to his prayers, the mental image of his pistol in the saddlebag flashed in his mind. Without wasting a moment, he sprung into action, leaping back towards the horse's remains. He dropped to one knee and tried to grab for the gun as the creature stopped merely a foot away from him, staring down at its prey with expressionless eyes. Sabinus's trembling hands scrambled with the bag, desperately trying to unfasten the straps. He felt a flicker of hope as his fingers brushed against the steel. He fumbled with it, trying to load in a shot. He was so focused on the task at hand, he didn't see the creature slowly and calmly extend a single clawed hand. With a creaking of ancient bones, it flexed its talons. Everything stopped. The rain, the pounding in his chest, it was as if reality simply paused. He felt something enter his mind, something oily and inhuman, a titanic alien presence beyond anything the mortal mind was capable of fully processing. Without thinking, he raised the pistol and threw it out into the rain. And as he did, reality came crashing back in. The monster crouched down on all fours, its face inching ever closer, its rancid breath spilling out as hot vapor against his face. This was it. Despite everything, there was no way out. It wasn't just his imminent death that caused his heart to sink, but the knowledge that everything he and his brothers had worked for was for nothing. They had failed themselves, this world, and the God Emperor. He knew he wouldn't be around to see it, but perhaps in one final act of defiance, he let his final thoughts focus on the hope that one of the few remaining members of the Terran Brotherhood would carry on with the mission and eventually see this world free of tyranny. He lay down on the cold, wet stones and curled into a ball, waiting for the pain to begin. But after several long, agonizing moments, it never came. He blinked and looked up at the creature. For a moment, it appeared as if it had simply frozen, every muscle in its body locked in time. But then it began to convulse, every part of its anatomy violently seizing. It was swaying and shivering, and its hideous wings were pounding out of sync with one another. But what was happening? Was it sick? Had a creature evolved to live in perpetual darkness been so disoriented by the moonlight? The reason didn't matter. This was his chance to escape. He stood, but before he could turn to run, he found himself watching in disbelief as the monster started to change. It was now shaking so violently that its silhouette seemed to blur. Its form began to collapse in on itself, its skin shrinking and reforming, its muscles ripping and stitching back together, every bone throughout cracking and snapping before reforming. All thought of escape dissipated from his mind as he stared mesmerized by the transformation taking place in front of him. The monstrous wings shriveled and shrank, folding back down into the creature's back. its crumpled, bestial face stretched, the skin smoothing out, and the black studs were replaced with clear, human eyes. He couldn't look away. In the course of a single minute, the monster vanished and had been replaced with the naked form of a magnificent noble, a man with cool blue eyes and tightly cropped hair. To his absolute bewilderment, he found himself staring up into the face of the sovereign, Lord Marville, the planetary governor and king of this world. He had no idea what was going on. He couldn't comprehend what he had just witnessed. He sat there, lost in utter confusion for several moments. But soon enough, visions began to manifest in his mind. At first, they were a blur, like a half-remembered dream. Yet gradually, they came more and more into focus, until he saw himself following the sovereign's orders, serving with dull-witted obedience as one by one he led the conspirators to Eisenbrock. He had betrayed those closest to him because it was the sovereign's will. He realized with shocking clarity that there really had been a traitor. It had been him. All this time, it had been him. Those who had sworn their life to his cause, he had brought them here to die. Lord Marvel showed no triumph as he looked down at Sabinus. There was no pleasure in those eyes, no hatred, no contempt, not even idle curiosity, just an utterly alien absence of emotion. He took a deep breath and rolled his shoulders, stretching out his new arms as if he had just awoken from a long sleep.
"Miana next,"
he said in a clear and precise tone, in words that seemed to echo as much as they did through the air as in Sabinus's mind. Then he turned to walk away, disappearing into the rain. Sabinus crumbled to the ground, shock and exhaustion robbing the strength from his legs. He slumped against the wall, unable to believe that he was still alive. Then, with a rush of panic, he felt his mind begin to cloud, and the memories of serving Marvel fading away as the sovereign disappeared. He gasped as the full gravity of the situation hit him. He was the traitor. It was his fault the members of his brotherhood, his friends, were being killed. He was the sovereign's slave. He rummaged through the saddlebag and took out a hunting knife. He stared at the long blade, tears welling up in his eyes as he gritted his teeth in despair and utter helplessness. He had to stop himself. He had to end this. He would not continue to serve that creature. But as he looked at the knife, he realized he couldn't remember why he was in such a panic state. His breathing calmed, and he returned to his senses. He cast the blade aside and stood up, attempting to get his bearings. He couldn't help but feel he had forgotten something, very important. He staggered forward, leaving the ruins behind, and made his way into the forest. His thoughts were a jumbled mess. He knew there was something that he had lost, something that he was desperate to remember. He had to find something, but what was it? He knew that everything hinged on him finding it, if he could only remember what it was. An hour passed, and he made his way out of the forest and back to the crossroads from before. It was then that it came to him. He remembered what he had to find.
"Ah, Miana,"
he said with a rush of relief. He had to find her. He had to warn her. She had to know that the conspiracy had been discovered. He looked back at the forest, remembering that this was the site of the Eisenbrock Basilica. He smiled. This was the perfect place to meet her. He had loved this place since childhood, and there, in the heart of the forest, they would be safe.